Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
Shit, don't get scared now.
They may take our life, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella story out of nowhere.
It's in the hole.
That the only thing we have to fear.
Baby, welcome back to the big show.
Josh and John here, buddy.
Man, I'll tell you what, Josh McCallum, thank you for bringing such great energy to our show. I love it. It is invigorating and it's contagious, by the way. Today we interviewed Dave Kiernan, a good friend of ours, a friend of mine for about a decade, maybe a little bit more. And man, he dropped some nuggets. He's a Canuck. He's from Canada. Surprise, surprise. He played ice hockey, 1994 NHL draft. This guy,
that's pretty awesome.
And now he's doing some amazing things. And the dude is so freaking humble.
He is.
You continue to listen to the show all the way to the end, you will get so much.
Yeah, I agree. I was glad you challenged him on that in the middle of the show. But you know what he's going to unlock for all of us? On top of a great man, and you can hear his quality as a person throughout everything he's going to explain in the show. But he's going to unlock a type of real estate that maybe you've heard on other shows, maybe you haven't, and maybe it's worth your looking into. And it's what do you call it? Laundromats. Mm-hmm. Laundromats. What a curious business that has been around for a while. And I think we didn't get into it in the show, but honestly, is probably here to stay for a long time, if not forever, according to him, when he and I were talking, because there's always going to be the family that just doesn't have the resources yet to have a full, you know, first class lifestyle like you and I get to live. And so there's this large sector that's going to be served this way. And do you want to be in it? And I'm going to leave you with one thought on that, John. This is a business, this laundromat business. He breaks it down all the way to the pipes. We're going to talk about pipes.
Yeah.
Because he's a very detail-oriented fella. There was a teaching I got years ago. It changed me. And I'm going to say this show is a lot, it makes that teaching true. There was a person, and he said to me, he goes, Josh, if you want to eat with the classes, you need to feed the masses. Have you ever heard that expression?
I haven't heard that.
He goes, because if you feed the classes, you will eat with the masses. So to break it down, fancy language, he's saying if you're feeding the richest people, you're doing some service for the few rich people in the world, you're never going to get out of day-to-day working to eat. You're going to just make enough to eat. You might make enough to get a fancy car mortgage and eat. That's it. But if you learn how to serve the great masses of society and you take a small piece of each dollar and keep it in your pocket, you will become one of the classes, the people who have resources. And I never thought it. So that saying is the laundromat business to the T. So you're going to learn everything you need, buddy.
Let's go.
Always fun to be in studio with Mr. Dave and John. Thank you both for being here, guys.
You know, it's just awesome when we get guys that can drive to the beautiful Renault, and the three of us are actually in the studio together. So we're excited to have Dave Kiernan, very good friend of mine for over a decade, Go Abundance brother. And he's going to teach us about his life and all the great lessons that he's learned. So Dave, can you take us through, you know, who you are and all kinds of good stuff?
Yeah, sure. First of all, love to be here. Thank you. Born and raised in Canada. I think a lot of guys are aware of that. Grew up in a middle class, lower middle class family, I think would be a best description. Played hockey in Canada for 14 years.
Wait, is that normal to play hockey in Canada?
Or is that
like the not so normal?
I should have said, being Canadian, I played hockey for 14 years. Thank you. Started playing hockey when I was 4 years old. My dad actually had to carry me out on the ice, and then finished at about 18 before I went to school. I was in the NHL draft in 94, didn't get picked up, and my parents taught me or convinced me that I needed to go to school. So I am the second of both either side of my family to actually graduate from college, which was pretty exciting at the time because I thought I was doing the right thing. Today, I would tell my kids to run away from college as fast as they could, based on everything I've learned throughout life. My parents had terrible financial acumen, if you will. We were always in debt as a lower income family, but you wouldn't know we were lower income because we always had nice cars, had a nice house, had a boat. But every month we had no money because they were paying for shit. No, sorry, am I allowed to say that?
You're Canadian.
Yes. Unfortunately, that IQ threshold probably translated to me. I'm probably one of the very few that can say they graduated high school with credit card debt. I actually had a job at a Petro-Canada, and the Petro-Canada was stupid. It's a gas station in Canada, and they were stupid enough to give me a credit card that I was able to, one, use for my gas and food from the restaurant that was upstairs, and unfortunately, working for a Petro-Canada, take cash advances whenever I needed to. So it got pretty ugly pretty quick. So I graduated with a pretty significant credit card debt. From a school perspective, graduated as a mechanical engineer. So I'm a mechanical engineer by trade. Worked in the U.S. for 3 years, or Canada for 3 years, and then came down here to develop a seat again with a competitor for the company I worked for up in Canada and when I was 24 years old. So came
did
down.
You say develop a seat?
Yes.
What do you mean by a seat?
So the company I was working for in Canada and the company I still work for today, we do seats for buses, trains, and military vehicles. Okay. So I was hired to develop a seat for the market down here. Got here in 99. It was actually very interesting when I interviewed. They had actually hired one of our sales guys originally from Canada, and he conveyed that I was going to be able to work out of his home office overlooking the lake and everything up in Canada and develop this seat for them and come down every once in a while. CEO called, got me on the phone. He says, if you want this job, that's fantastic, but you're coming here. So literally May of 99, picked up my Rottweiler, threw him in my Jeep and drove to Philadelphia. They put me up at the Crown Plaza at 1800 Market Street. Okay. I wrote 8100 Market Street and ended up under the L the first night I was here with my Rottweiler. From there, I was literally here for about 3 months and they shipped me to Poland. I moved to Poland for 8 months of my life to actually to work with a company that we had picked a seat for. So we worked out there to develop the technology and such to make meet US specs, and then came back and continued to work here. I've been with the same company still, so I am still there. Been with them since 99. I've done everything in that organization except accounting. So I've run sales for them for divisions. I've run their engineering group, their procurement group, their fabrication shop, their quality department. So I've got a little bit of everything when it comes to building stuff. Traveled the world, fortunately and unfortunately.
These are the fun parts of working for a big company, right? I mean, maybe they're not always fun, but you get to travel the world. Nobody else gets to do that anymore.
Sure, sure. Yeah. So if I was single at the time, I probably would have had the best life, right? So I would leave on Monday morning, come back on Friday night, or sometimes I would leave on Monday and come back 3 weeks later. Unfortunately, I missed a lot of my kids growing up. It changed for me probably around somewhere 2015 or so. Nah, probably even earlier than that though. I came back from a trip and my little girl looked at me and asked me if I was home for a visit.
Oh, I get it.
It's like, yeah. I felt the same bitch. I pay for this stuff. but that was just how bad it was. I was just always on the road, always away, always missing things. I missed soccer practices. I missed games. I missed the school events, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it just, it made it real, real hard. And it was at a point where I said, you know what, this has got to change. We got to do something different. In 2015, we did a PE acquisition with the business I work for, which was awesome.
Wait. So you guys bought another business or they bought you?
They bought us.
Right.
Which was real, real cool.
And no one has ever said that that's awesome until you. You normally really? People say it didn't go well after they invested in us. Okay. It went differently for you?
This has been an amazing experience with this group. They literally left the entire executive team except the CEO in place. And have injected immense capital into the business. So we went from being a three division business, 10 years ago when they bought us, so I guess 9 years ago when they bought us, to now it is worldwide. And we have probably stacked 5 or 6 companies on us. So they've really turned it. It was a platform for them to bolt on, and they just bolted on and bolted on and bolted on. So for me, it was that part of it was an incredible experience. It also opened my eyes to how hard I worked to watch somebody else get rich.
Yeah.
So I got a bite of the apple. They handed me $400,000, which I thought was amazing. My dumb ass turned around and paid off my mortgage with it, 'cause I didn't know any better at the time. And that's about when I met this guy.
John. I'll tell you what though, before you go down that path, did you guys, so you meet him, has nothing to do with making money. That wasn't the first way. So how did you meet John?
So John's sister and my wife and I guess we all went to the same church up in Oaks or Royersford. So we were in church up there together. And then his sister was moving away. And I was like, well, you need to meet John and Christine and the rest of the family. You probably love them. And I don't know, it's been awesome ever since. John's badass. And his family's incredible. And I've got 10 years on him, I think. Oh no, 6 years, 7 years on you. And he's probably a mentor to me. So it's been awesome to learn from John. I've made a lot of mistakes along the way, but it's been awesome to learn from him.
So. Now, without a doubt, John, we all owe you so much. Sorry about that. That's inside baseball. And another inside baseball is when we speak, you have to go into that side. Sorry. For those of you who are watching this podcast, this is what it's the difference between doing it live. This is actually the way podcasts used to be, John. People always used to get together. But now we're so used to digital technologies, we're never together anymore.
Well, we have fun regardless. Even during technical difficulties, it's fun. And I think some of these listeners that know us, they probably...
There's always one.
Have a good time.
But Dave, I love the fact that, you know, first of all, you threw out there that you made a mistake and paid off your mortgage. Now, without a doubt, that must have felt good, though, when you did it.
It felt like I was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So, and it was fantastic. I didn't have a mortgage. I had my taxes once a year. It felt freeing. It felt like I could do whatever I wanted. But you find something else to do with the money that you're saving, right? And I wasn't investing it, I'll tell you that, at that point in time. So, my first investment was with John. I bought into the gym that he was part of.
Yep.
That was heartbreaking when it shut down. Yeah. Because it was such an amazing community group. I felt like I grew more just as a person intermingling with the folks I got to, like the fighters and such, and participating in those events. I thought that was just awesome. And I grew from that perspective. Unfortunately, I was still in my W-2. And I didn't get to spend a lot of time down at the gym. But my wife was engaged, and she really, as a personal trainer, she was loving being at the gym on a regular basis. So when we had to give that up, that sucked. We had a really, really difficult landlord, to say the least. And we were trying to cater to a very large community in a big building. And we were a boutique. Thank you. Boutique offering. Right. So definitely had great clientele, but it wouldn't grow like you'd want
to meet the size of the rent. But it could have done well if it had a different shape.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
And I hear great stories from all the work you've done with that kind of stuff, John.
Yeah. So after that, John introduced me to flipping because I'd never flipped a house before. So we flipped a couple houses together. Great experience. Definitely something you have to do over and over and over again, and nothing passive about that, right? Never mind the fact that I was working with John, so I really didn't have a team to go do it on my own. So I was like, well, John, who are we using on this one? Great, let's go. But what John did teach me at that point in time was, hey, you paid off your mortgage. Let's go put a HELOC on your house and start pulling that money out.
Right.
So that's what we started to do. And it definitely made sense. But without a team, without trying to tap into his team all the time, because he was doing the same thing at the time, it didn't make sense to continue to try and do that. So 2018, after the conversations with my wife and watching some of these things and spending many Sundays at a church when you're sitting there breaking down because you're not at home, because you're out traveling and spending time with the pastor and trying to figure out where you're going to go with this stuff. It's like, I got to figure out something different. So 2018, I decided to buy into a custom automotive shop.
Okay.
I am a car guy from here to the end. It's all I think about all the time.
And plus you're in that industry a bit, right?
Right. So
you know the space.
Especially from, I spend a lot of time on the military side. Everything on the military side is cool, right? There's nothing they do that's boring. So I got to see some of the most amazing things being developed that they still haven't brought to market today, which was amazing. And it just made me more and more excited. So bought into a custom automotive shop thinking I was going to like change motors, tint things up, make things super cool. Anybody who wanted something that's different than anything else, let's go do it. Turned out the owner was a narcissist. He went after my wife and I left a bunch of money on the table. And I just said, I can't do this. But when I'd made that decision, I'd actually done it through a 401k Rob's. So I'd pulled all this capital out of my 401k to put into something. So then I was sitting there, had left my job. So I'm still with the company today, but I literally quit in 2018 in October. I was back working for them in January. That's how fast it fell apart because this guy was a complete ass. I went back as a consultant with them, but I had all this capital available that I'd pulled out of my 401k because I quit my job.
Yep.
So I was like, okay, what's passive-ish out there that I can go do? Because everybody wants passive, right? Because that was the term then. So I dropped money into a laundromat. I thought I bought my first laundromat by just paying off the other guy's debt, and he went away. And then COVID happened.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, great. I got this laundromat, and nobody's allowed to come to it.
Wait, that wasn't an essential. Seriously, I didn't know that.
No, it did. They for the first 6-8 weeks, it wasn't essential.
But then it became
essential, which was a saving grace.
Totally.
But within those first 6 to 8 weeks, I panicked so much that I went out and bought a van and started doing pickup and delivery like right away. It was like, okay, if they can't come to me, I'm going to go get their stuff. So we bought a van, started a pickup and delivery business on the side that we go out, grab their things, bring it back, wash it, take it back to them, right? You can't come to the store. You're afraid to come to the store. Call me. We'll come and do that. So we started that right away. And then late 2020, we bought our second store. That was an absolute mess. It's 5,400 square feet. We had to gut it. When I bought it, there were 8 washers that worked and 11 dryers, and we had to throw all 100 pieces of equipment that were in that store out. It took us almost a year. We didn't open until October 21.
Now, did you have partners for that, or you did that
yourself? That's a great question. And it's one of the things I wish I would have done better in a lot of these things is actually found partners. So at the same point in time I opened these laundromats, I bought a bunch of real estate in Norristown. Those in Norristown know that that's a bad idea to start with. but we ended up with 10 doors in Norristown, and we did all of that with capital I had. And with that spending the capital and the laundromat spending the capital, all of a sudden I was at a point where I had spent all my money and I couldn't go. So that's literally the phase I'm at right now, where I'm trying to divest of some of the stuff I don't want anymore to get some liquid to go again, because I've stopped growing because I've got nothing to grow with.
This is a really interesting case study, John. I mean, a lot of that is positive though. I mean, you're still sitting on those 2 laundromats.
Yes.
And at this point, do you still do the drive and pick up, or is that over with?
No, actually, that is probably the biggest part of our business right now.
It's a good business.
It is. It
marginally makes money even with the cost.
Yes. It becomes more of a logistical business than it does the self-serve laundry. Like the doors open on the store and the lights come on in the store. People come in and use equipment all day, do what they need to do. They don't need a person for that.
Yeah.
As soon as I started doing pickup and delivery, now I need employees, I need trucks, I need drivers. I got to figure out the route that makes the most sense. There's lots of software out there that helps us do that. And there's a whole bunch of competition in that market with respect to what makes sense. But it's amazing how much of the, if you will, our customers, whether it be commercial customers or residential customers, still don't know it exists. To the extent to which it exists. Our biggest competitor in the Philadelphia area is a happiness provider. He's built a 50,000 square foot facility in Oaks, PA. He has 20 vans come into the city every day and go back out of the city every day. We've got 2. So there's immense competition or immense room to grow from that perspective.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, something, and we're swinging mics around here. If you guys are really getting the live stuff. But you know, something that has really come across here during this interview is Dave's humility. What he didn't tell you is he's a top executive with his company. They build vehicles that keep our military safe overseas, bulletproof windows, seats that, you know, are intact if they drive over landmines.
Oh, the-
really, really interesting stuff. He's shown me before and after pictures of, you know, let's say a Nissan Pathfinder. It doesn't look anything like it did when they first got it. And this laundromat business is crushing it. So he's been super humble with how he's spoken, but he's really achieved a lot in his life. And that's one of the reasons that we were so excited to have him on the show, because he truly does have a story to tell that everyone can relate to.
Yeah. And I agree with John 100%, Dave. It's fun. It's your Canadian personality, isn't it? My brother-in-law Theo is also Canadian. Well, he said he grew up in Canada long, and you would love him. He's a hockey guy. No, sure. He didn't play hockey. He played rugby, but he definitely probably played some hockey. But
I played rugby too. That's a good game too.
Yeah, he's a big rugby guy. And now he's the wine. He's a great winemaker.
Nice.
Very understated for how successful he is. So maybe that's just a Canadian way about you guys.
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
A little humble and hot-tempered all at the same time, right?
So. The future, though, are you going to buy more laundromats? Are you going to grow that portion of it?
So that's – it's actually – I feel like I'm at a decision point today. I get calls on a regular about laundromat opportunities that are for sale.
Really? Because you're an operator.
Because I'm current operator.
Brokers or?
No, it's current operators. So I've you kind of let people know you're looking, right? So you can do all the cold mail calls, and I don't think it's worth it. My distributor is awesome. He literally approached me last week.
Point. That's where all you get the leads.
Well, and this, quite honestly, you'll fail if you don't have a good distributor.
Okay, so distributors, you mean in that case, washers and dryers?
Yes. Yes.
And do you need to replace them a lot so you know this guy pretty well? Or?
Yes. Well, hopefully you don't replace them a lot, but I have. Ideally, you'd buy a store that could function for a while. Both of my stores, I've basically gone in and had to gut them. So I've got about 1.4 mil into my two stores of new equipment. And COVID killed that too. A washer that was 18 grand in 2019 is $34,000 now. Yes. No, they've literally doubled in price, which has made it even more difficult, especially with inflation and interest rates the way they are right now. Yeah. I'm exploring an opportunity right now in the Germantown area that the mat itself is only about 2,000 square feet, which is about my first store. I bought my first store for 100 grand. It cost me 300 grand to retool. This store, to get into it, will be over $1 million for the same size store. Now, if it'll perform and the numbers make sense, 7 years from now when the equipment's paid off, it'll drop ridiculous dollars to the bottom line. It's just getting through that window of retooling it, because it's going to last 20 years once you put it in there.
Okay.
So it's not like your home machine that's gone in 8 months, right? Today, a washer, you're lucky if it'll last you a year at home. These things are built to last 15, 20 years, and they don't take a lot of maintenance. They'll break brand new. They break, but they're not difficult to work on.
Oh, really?
As a mechanical engineer, you kind of
get... Wait, you actually get involved that way too?
Oh, I fix them all. Yeah, I don't... To get a technician to come into the building, it costs him $300 just to get him to show up. I'm not paying.
Okay, so you are still working full-time,
though. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I work. I work my W-2. I have my own property manager, and I run my laundromats, yes. And there's other stuff I want to do in the future that I'm trying to figure out. So
I'll tell you what, this whole laundromat thing, I never thought about that. You're saying because it's a smaller market sector of real estate, the people who sell the equipment know who wants to sell.
Yes.
Build it.
Yeah.
And businesses.
Yeah. So literally something like this Germantown opportunity that we're looking at is a landlord that has a strip mall. He thinks it would do well with a laundromat. There's a few laundromats in the area, but they're old beat up stores. I went and took a ride through. It's Germantown, so it's sketchy, right?
Yeah.
Most laundromats are in sketchy areas, quite honestly. Right. Like, let's talk about who my clientele is. It's low income clientele.
Right. Right? So it's people that aren't able to put it right in their house.
Right.
So yeah, you do always have like a
you just got to pay attention to that. So, but it's a nice strip mall. He's looking to put something in there. He wants a laundromat in the building. He's literally willing to put in a whole bunch of the infrastructure. I just got to come and bolt up to it basically and let's go. But just to come and bolt up to it, it's going to cost me $1 million where it would have been $500,000 4 years ago.
New building or an older building?
No, it's about a 20-year-old building.
I've heard that like setting up a laundromat would be tricky these days because of all the environmental concerns and the run out.
So absolutely. City of Philadelphia alone, $200,000 in impact fees before you can even touch the ground.
Define what that means, just so people who are listening, you know, we're all learning business in different ways. So sure. What does that mean?
That means before I can plug into the sewer, electric and gas, the city takes $200,000 and says, okay, now you have permission to do that. They go and do some field studies to make sure that I'm not impacting the sewer lines, et cetera, and the amount of flow based on what the existing parameters are of the residential neighborhood. But it's literally $200,000 fee just to play.
Back when you bought the first two, did you have to pay an upgrade to the impact fee, or is that just not an issue if you buy an existing
operator? Buy an existing store, it doesn't exist.
Wow.
Now, the challenge with an existing store is the flow of the new machines versus the old top loaders is significantly different. So,
is it higher or lower?
Higher.
Whoa. Okay, wait. That's confusing. So an older machine dumped less water?
Not less, slower. So an older machine, a top loader, will evac the water, and it will flow at, call it 15 feet per second. The new machines push the water out in a front loader and they'll flow at 40 feet per second. So I need bigger pipes. I need cleaner pipes.
Never thought of that.
So most new stores today, they'll put what they call a trough in, as opposed to going down in the concrete drain. In the trough, you literally just dump the water in a big basin, and as it collects, it slowly pours out. As
it kind of makes sense.
One, it gets my customer out faster because the machine gets rid of the water faster. It's not trying to push it out through a small 3-inch, 4-inch pipe. It gets to just dump it into a hole. Like literally, you go into one store.
I'll tell you what. I'll pause you for a minute. You can tell you're an engineer. By the way, I could geek out about this stuff, but I just want to stop you there because I think I get it.
Sure.
But I love this. Where's the biggest? Sounds to me the biggest opportunity is not buying a new one to build, but to buy as many older ones as you can.
Yes.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com. You can fill out the contact form. We'll get right back to you and see if this is a great fit for you and your family. We'd love to meet you. We look forward to learning about you. Please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking. Enjoy.
Yeah, so
your high cost might be machines.
Yes.
Because you're going to want to get rid of the ones that you buy.
Yeah, so long as the infrastructure in the building can support what you're trying to put
in. And if it can't, you'll do the trough concept,
right,
which should mitigate the speed problem.
Yes, but it's going to cost you.
It's almost like a septic tank under the concrete somehow that catches the water so it flows out slower.
Yes.
And damn, dude, everybody, I remember 30 years ago, Melanie and I had a friend that was always an entrepreneur in college, and he went back to Dallas where he's from, and everybody was talking about him. Oh yeah, he was like 20, 21, he's buying every laundromat he can back then. And I was always like, laundromats, you know? And then you go full cycle and you start to say, If we didn't manage it the way you're literally managing everything, right, Dave? Now, you must have some staff.
I have attendants. I have a lead attendant. And then we went to a third party driver application, which has made that a lot easier. I literally just
it's worth it every day. Yeah. Even with all those costs.
Yeah.
But I mean, my point is, I'm just going to throw this out there. I mean, this show will probably get some of the most downloads because we're talking about a type of real estate that most people, I think some people actually start to understand this could be lucrative if you really get some scale on this.
For sure.
Have you ever thought about that? Like, what would scale be? 10?
Yeah. So actually it's a great point, and it's where my head's at right now. I actually listened to Brad's Mullins podcast on the way up, and he's got his two, right? He's got one that he built and one that hasn't done anything with because it won't change his life. One or two laundromats aren't going to change your life.
Right.
But my perspective right now is if I can give it 6 to 10,
I think
that are at a decent number. The big thing that I see changing in this industry, and it's really changed a lot since COVID because there's so much interest now. It's becoming more and more like the car wash industry.
Yeah. Well, the car wash industry went on fire the last few years.
So you're seeing franchises come in.
Yes.
And you're starting to see some private equity,
right,
VC capital groups that are coming in and buying up, but they're not going to come and buy mom and pops
no
on the corner. But if I can have 10 of them, That could be a great exit strategy 5 years from now if I can get 10 of them.
And I think you're right. I mean, you remember, I mean, just to compare to all of us who talk about multifamily a lot on these shows, what do they always say? Well, you need to buy 100 units at a time because then you can put a really good management program in place with a full-timer. And it does feel like you need a few of these before you could get like a regional GM of some
sort.
For sure.
For sure. Yeah, I feel like I need one more to quit my W-2 is literally where I'm at.
But really? They'll produce enough income to offset some of that?
Because of my debt service right now. So
this is modest.
Yeah. So when you think of a laundromat, think of it in quarters. Okay. Whatever your gross revenue is, 25% of it goes to your rent or your mortgage. 25% of it goes to utilities. 25% of it goes to staff. 25% of it goes in your pocket. So
25% margin to your pocket's awesome.
But then
unless you have debt on it.
Right. So literally right now, my two stores, debt-free, clear about $350 a year. I had the debt on that. I'm pulling $150 out a year.
Right. And that, you know, let's just brainstorm. I mean, John and Dave, is there lending facilities you could get to help you leverage the growth? Like, could you put some debt on those first two to buy four more or two more?
Yes. So literally I put,
is there good debt programs? Like if you just walk into a community bank, they'll say, let's sit down.
No, a community
more special.
From what I've found, I've only found two loan offices that'll actually support the laundromat industry. It's a lot like car wash. You go into a bank, a bank wants nothing to do with buying a car wash or supporting a car wash. But there's Capital Equity in Chicago, and then there's Eastern Funding up in New York. And when I built the second store, I used my first store as leverage to buy the second store. And then the $1 million worth of equipment I put in, they financed 100% of it.
Yeah, I was going to say that you could probably get financing for that.
But financing in 2019 was 5%. Financing in 2024 right now is 12%. At 12%, a big store doesn't make sense for a single guy like me that's trying to do it on his own. So,
wow. Yeah, look, man, I think there's going to be a ton of people listening to this show saying, I'd love to see how I could help this guy get some more properties.
Yeah, and to add to that, one of the very smart things that you did, Dave, was when you started buying those vans during the shutdowns, you also got into Airbnbs with your vans. So how many Airbnbs are you currently servicing? Because that's super smart.
So we service about 60.
In what way? Would you just go slower down? So you're saying, like, how does that work? If I have an Airbnb, what do I do for you with you?
You either can set it up through online or by a phone call. We set you up as a customer. Literally, we come into the Airbnb. Typically, the cleaning crew has already done their work. They'll leave it either inside the door or outside the door. We come and clean all their linens and we bring it back the next day. We do 60 units right now for a group in the city of Philadelphia, where we would literally go in and they have closets in specific buildings. We go in and stock the closet. So we have sheets, that's towels, linens, etc. We literally go into that closet, repopulate their cabinets, if you will, with all the different sizes, put it all in, take out all the dirty.
So then they own what is called PARs, one, two, or three PAR, where they can do the whole property.
Yes.
Sounds like twice, or do they have three?
Three.
Yeah. Three is safest. That's how we do it in the hotel world.
Yeah. It's like a mini Aramark or Cintas operation. Yes.
Right. Yeah. How do you compare it? Do they offer this competitive product?
They are significantly cheaper than we are. So, but a smaller group, you call Cintas with 10 units, they're going to tell you to go away because you're not worth their time. They want thousands of pounds of laundry.
Mm-hmm.
I want hundreds of pounds of laundry in a day to keep my attendance busy and to make a few bucks off of it. I don't need thousands. I won't have the capacity today.
Right.
I obviously have the opportunity to go to a overnight shift when I'm, because we only run a daytime, like we run 6 to 10. So I have a 10 to 6. I could do a night shift of nothing.
I always wonder about that. So are your shops open 24 hours a day to the coin operator?
No, we run a 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. The store opens by itself in the morning and closes by itself.
The doors.
Yes. Doors and lights come on and open and lock.
So if I'm still in there at 10, will I see the lockdown happen? Then I'll just leave.
So lights stay on for an extra 20 minutes. We have signage that says your last wash should be like 8:45. That way it gives you time to fold up and get out. We try and communicate to our customers that you're going to get locked in. We also, we have to push the green
button. But the machines are going to shut off.
Yes. Yeah. So if they're in the wash, they can't start a washer. So the washer shut down. So
wow. This is super technical. Those are fantastic. Those are really advanced machines.
Yes.
So that machine can be clocked.
Yes.
It's not just like a surge protector that has it on off switch.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So man.
We kill the power to the washers. The dryers we let run. That way, if somebody's been late, if they got in for whatever reason.
And is this something you changed? Was it 24 hours and you changed it?
No, it was never 24 hours.
Problems happen late at night.
As we've gone, we do card reader systems.
I love don't all go that.
Collect coins. Like, it's just a waste of time.
So there, I can't even bring coins anymore.
No. In fact, my one store down.
It is crazy to bring coins now because everything's like $7.
Yeah. Well, that's
what is a that's so digging in on this. What is a wash load typically?
So
it's called middle of the road size.
Middle of the road. Let's put it this way: your small machines, you pay about 20 cents a pound.
Too fancy. Okay. None of us know how to think like that.
Okay.
Like I don't know how much.
Yeah. Okay. So my middle of the road machine $7.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. My high end machines are 12. My low end machines are 4. Yeah. Small machines are 4.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I think people would be very curious to see you develop a system that could be managed and you could start predicting profitability off this. I think it's great. I mean, ultimately it seems like a very compelling, what do they call that? A moat, you know, very hard to get a new one built probably. Mm-hmm. Not many people chasing the old ones. I think there's a business there. I'm glad you're doing it.
I appreciate it.
A business to grow.
Yep.
Yeah. So as we wind down, Dave, because our listeners are definitely going to want to connect with you, where do they find you?
So I'm on LinkedIn. I definitely have a LinkedIn profile that flags both my current W-2 as well as a founder of the laundromat. So I'm flagged in both of them. If you want to talk laundry, you can always hit me up at help@extremelaundry.com.
I like that name.
Just use X. It's not EX. It's XTRME.
Yeah, I like that.
Laundry.com. Personally, I'm on Facebook, Instagram, or can email me on Gmail.
Yeah, so that we'll put that in there. But what is your email at Gmail?
DG Kiernan. So DGKIERNN01@gmail.com.
Yeah, I think it's awesome to bring in new for the first time ever in 300 plus shows, first time ever really deep diving into laundromats. Thank you very much, brother.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys for the time today.
Cheers.
Bam! Straight!
We just got
buddy!
We got to the end of another great show, and everyone listening right now, you're the family! Family and friends, thanks for staying till the end.
That was so fun.
And hey, hit the like, hit subscribe. We're here to serve you guys. That's why we're doing this show. Josh is not paying me. I'm doing this off of my quote-unquote sweat equity because we want to make a difference in your life, and then that ripple effect will continue to touch the world.
Hey, amen, brother. Please check us out on capitalhacking.com, all the social media threads. And yes, I know you've probably already sent this episode to one of your best friends. Thank you. We love you. Just go right into your iPhone, hit the plus symbol. We'll talk to you later. See you next week.
Share.